Good morning and welcome to Investment Talk, a one-hour live radio program brought to you by the financial advisors of Legacy Wealth Management of Fargo and Bismarck and featuring the president and financial advisor of Legacy, Paul Myers, and financial advisor and CFP, Brady Brunsvold, with host Steve Poitras. Securities and investment advice from LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, and member FINRA and SIPC. Nothing in today's show is an offer to buy or sell securities, and you should consult with an investment advisor in person before taking any action, as every investment involves risk. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. And now, the award-winning team at Legacy Wealth Management presents Investment Talk.
Any cost. Yes. Good morning. Welcome to this Sunday morning edition of Investment Talk, brought to you by the advisors at Legacy Wealth Management. I'm Steve Poitras, and the rest of our cast of characters this morning includes advisor from Legacy Wealth Management, Brian Bruce.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Our producer, Josh Linus. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Joining us from far away, not that far away. The president and CEO, you're so far away from me, so far. I'm thinking of a Dire Straits song. It's a good one, too. Anyway, Paul Myers, good morning, Paul.
Yes, I am far out, Steve. I'm far out, and I'm happy to be on board this morning. And Brian, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very good, Paul.
I have one more character to introduce. We're going to feature him more heavily in the latter part of our show today, and that would be the Renaissance man, master of versatility himself, Rick Guion. Good morning, Rick.
Good to be with you guys.
Rick, more specifically today, is going to be talking about the restaurant situation. We hear a lot of, I mean, you don't have to be around downtown Fargo to realize there are new places opening, but sometimes closing, and sometimes it's closing not because there hasn't been sufficient business, but for other reasons.
There's right? There's a lot going on in the bar and restaurant industry, right. Yes.
So anyway, we will reserve that discussion till later on, but we certainly encourage you to take part in all of the fun and action that we have leading up to that, Rick.
It's Sunday fun day, isn't it?
Okay, so we got that.
It is Sunday fun day. Hey, Steve, I want to insert two things. You know, if we have Rick back again, he really should bring some samples from all those restaurants, because that guy has dined in just about every restaurant this side of the Rocky Mountains, I think.
And yet he has real down-home taste, because I brought in some breakfast sandwiches from one of our local fast food places, and he just lit up. I like you.
I actually had a Big Mac last night about 10 p.m. Wow. So I went to McDonald's and had a, you know, I love a good McDonald's hamburger.
Well,
you can't argue with the
success they've had. I wonder how it's going in over in Russia where McDonald's stopped and they reopened these places with some other name like Taste Good or something.
No, it's known as the potato.
And don't you forget it.
Hey, you know what? That was kind of fun to open up this morning with I Want Security. That you know who performs that, I would imagine, Steve-O?
Well, because, of course, you put it here on the script. It's I might have guessed. Etta James, who is so well-known, of course, for... What is that big song she's so famous for? Till Then, Nowhere. What am I thinking of?
Well, she has a lot of songs, and I'm not sure which one she's the most famous for. I'd Rather Go Blind, she did At Last. Something's Got a Hold on Me. I'd Rather, that was a bit. The Wallflower, a lot of big songs. Wow. But you know what amazes me is I did not realize that Etta James was born way back in...
That's the song I'm thinking of, At Last.
All right.
I'm sorry. Sorry to bust
in. She was born way back in 1938, and she actually died in 2012. I was thinking she was still around. But she's a still a very popular, you know, kind of a jazz performer and an interesting lady to read about her. And, you know, that's what happens is whenever I pick some song, I end up reading about these people. And I'll tell you what, that, the whole entertainment industry, very, very interesting and lots of, you know, as they say, 6 degrees of separation, people she knew, people she worked with, all kinds of things. She did a movie back in like 1983 or something called Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll. And it was with Chuck Berry and what's his face from the Rolling Stones. And
Mick Jagger?
Interesting. Keith Richards.
Keith Richards, okay.
And Keith Richards and Chuck Berry argued during the whole darn thing because Keith somehow thought he should be in charge, and Chuck Berry was quite sure that, Cadillac was doing about 95 right down the road, and Chuck was going to be in charge.
Well, Maybelline, why can't you be true? Well, anyway. obviously, I want some security. We could draw some sort of connection between the song by Etta James and what maybe a lot of investors are wanting. I want some security here in this rather rocky year of 2022 in the stock markets.
Mm-hmm. You know, Brian and I were talking about that on Friday about what the market has been doing lately. Brian, we had a rough day on Friday and not too bad of a week prior to that, but a rough day on Friday.
Yeah, rough day on Friday for the simple fact that, the non-farm payroll jobs report came out, and it was actually pretty good, Paul. And I came into your office and said, gee, isn't that great? Employment is still really strong. Wages are still up year over year. And you said, well, we just wait and watch what the market does because they might not react very well to that. And the reason why is the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell in particular has raised the interest rates 5 times this year for a total of 3%. And that's a lot. But they also have a meeting coming up on November 2nd. And because the jobs report was so strong and it held up pretty well, that means that the Federal Reserve is going to continue its rate hike policy. And that is bad for the stock markets. And that's what the reaction was.
Yeah, it's
on
like
Friday.
It's like good news is bad news.
Exactly. Exactly, Steve.
Baffles me.
And so that's exactly what happened, and that's why you saw the markets react in a not-so-good way on Friday.
And in spite of the huge hits that all the major indexes took on Friday because of such big days, a couple of big days early in the week, for the whole week, the first week of October, the markets were actually up.
Yeah, and that's a good thing because 3 weeks prior, they were down 3 consecutive weeks in a row. So
as you
nice.
Pointed out, how bad was this September? How bad was it?
September, we had the worst September in 20 years, Steve, and the facts are the facts. We don't always like to, acknowledge some of those facts, but that's it was a rugged month of September.
Paul often asks us to try to downplay those facts.
Yeah.
No, I don't ask us to downplay them, but what I do know is this, and we're going to talk about some interesting factoids here in just a moment, but what I do know is this, having been involved in this industry for between 30 and 40 years, I can't believe I've done anything for 30 or 40 years.
And he's approaching competency, folks.
it's a long time. We've seen this kind of thing before. Sometimes it seems worse than others. But just think for a moment what it was like in March of 2020 when then-President Trump announced that, this little thing that I thought was a cold is going to be kind of a serious pandemic. And, it looks pretty rugged. Well, the markets went farther south than Nashville. And the next thing we know, we're off like about 30%. But 2-3 months later, we've recovered all that. And gone on. I mean, the whole pandemic thing, when you think about how serious that was huge. The number of people worldwide who passed away prematurely from that, it's incredible. Well, anyway, the markets, we get beat back and forth. And I think Friday's news is testament to the fact that, you can beat us, you can whip us, you can do whatever you need to, but that the American economy remains pretty strong in a lot of ways. And that's kind of interesting. Steve, I know I'm zooming along, and I want to make sure we leave enough time for your question of the week, which is going to be fascinating.
We've got ample time.
Okay.
But what I did want to talk about, I'm kind of a baseball fan. I have always been a baseball fan all the way back to the Fargo-Moorhead Twins back before I think, World War One. It seems like. Anyway, here's an interesting factoid that I dug up, and we talk a little bit about this on our TV show today, which, by the way, comes on in central and western North Dakota at 9:30 a.m. and in eastern North Dakota on your ABC stations all around the state, comes on in eastern North Dakota at 10 a.m. Here's an interesting factoid. The Minnesota Twins wrapped up their season this past week, and frankly, it was kind of a rugged season, but the stock market also wrapped up a pretty interesting time on Wednesday. Now, I know it's Sunday today, but I took a look at the numbers through Wednesday, and the stock market had recovered a bit the first couple of days of October, although we had a pretty weak Friday, as Brian just pointed out. I want to put things in perspective, though. The Dow Jones average closed this week about the same time the Twins closed. The Dow Jones average closed on Wednesday at 30,273. So I put Brady and Brian, our crack legacy research team, on the case, and they went back 5 years ago when the Twins wrapped up another season somewhat, and to see where the average was 5 years ago. The year was 2017. We picked the same date, October 4th, 2017. The Dow Jones average closed at 22,641 on that date, Steve.
Yeah,
the Dow has gained...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, we don't realize just how much these indexes have gone up.
Yeah, that's a 33% gain over 5 years, or it's about 6.6% per year, even after the underperformance of this year, Paul.
So then you looked, you looked further back.
Yeah. Well, we went back, this same crack research team, and we feed them coffee and sausage egg McMuffins to keep them going. We took a look 10 years ago, back to October 4th, 2012. Wow. The Twins had wrapped up another glorious season, probably barely above the Mason-Dixon line, and the Dow was at 13,494. So in 10 years, Steve, I know you can do the math. What's the Dow gained in those 10 years?
Well, 16,779 points, or nearly 125%, which, you know, we've been around for all of that, but it's really hard to remember that it really has appreciated that much.
Yeah, it's sort of a, you know, what has it done for me lately type of a attitude. But that's 125% gain, or 12.5% per year. And again, that's even after a rugged year in 2022.
Yeah, right.
So the message is definitely, you know, when you can have the time to look at the long term. I mean, let's face it, if someone says, well, geez, I need all my money in 6 weeks, pretty hard to say, well, you know, you got to be here for the long term. But most of us are a little bit longer term investors. And not only that, even when the market goes down 10%, most people can survive that as long as they don't need all of their, you know. If they said, well, gee, I'm taking it all out, I have to buy my new house on that date, well, that's a little rugged. But I think it's sometimes a bit calming, a bit soothing to realize that, you know, the market does this. It goes up, 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 up for 5 years, like it has in the last 5 or 6 years, and then it goes down for a while. And with these interest rates that are coming, it's going to be a bit of a rugged ride. But we'll talk more about that in the second half of the show when we take a look at the stock market week in review. But I think it's good to remember, just like the Twins, there's always another year.
Okay. Well, let's go on with the help of our crack producer, Josh Linus. Let's go to one of our first features here.
It's now time for the Legacy Wealth Management Question of the Week.
Actually had a couple of them, but I chose to do this one. You may have heard that sometime within this last week, our total U.S. national debt has now surpassed $31 trillion. Wow. That's according to the Department of the Treasury. Now, one thing that's reassuring, you know, we hear about how much debt is held by foreign countries or foreign investors. Well, about $24 trillion out of that $31 trillion, or roughly, 70, 80%, is held by American companies or American private investors. But this still leaves like $6 trillion or more that's held by other countries. So here's the question. And if you think you have the answer, call us at 237-5948 or 701-237-5948 or on your cell phone, #5346. The question is, which foreign country is the leading holder of American debt? There's at least three of them that have that are holding a whole lot. But which one holds the most? Which country, which foreign country holds the largest amount of our American debt?
Now, we know it's not Albania, right? Is Albania still around?
Oh, yeah, they're around. Yeah, they're still hugging the Adriatic coast, the eastern coast of the Adriatic. They're next to a whole lot of those other Balkan nations.
Wow.
But no, isn't an interesting question.
You can rule out all of the Balkan nations. None of them are leading holders of American debt. 237-5948.
And the fascinating thing is sometimes people think, well, whatever country that is, boy, they hold a real stranglehold on America. And that's not true because they hold debt. They're in the weaker position in many ways. And it's interesting. Did you say that the vast majority of it is held inside the U.S.?
Yes. About 24 trillion of the 31 trillion. So
that'd be about 70-80%.
You know, in terms of everybody that holds treasuries, you know, all of the different things. And we do have some phone activity.
All right.
We can tear Josh away from his sausage McMuffin. Oh, nobody gets spared here this morning.
Nope.
We've got Teresa from Central Minnesota, which doesn't really narrow it down, but we talked to Teresa. We talked to yesterday on Trivia Time, right, Teresa?
Yeah, we were getting some rain, too. So a little thunder. Mm-hmm. Just heard a little pop. So, yeah.
Okay, well, Teresa, which country do you think holds the most U.S. Debt?
The name that you see, anything that you buy, you turn it over and you look at the label, China.
Well, here's the interesting thing. That was true until fairly recently when China decided to unload a fair amount of its debt. So China, actually, they still hold a lot. They hold $967 billion, but they're no longer number one. So with the other phone lines still quiet, you want to take a guess at another country that might be up there that has now the leading holder of American debt?
Well, there's either going to be Russia or India, because India.
Let me give you a little bit of a hint there, Teresa. Yeah. Let's go with when you're having your sausage egg McMuffin and someone mutters something near you and you go, eh?
Canada.
No, it's not.
Oh, wait. Hey. Canada.
What do you think, Paul, that it's Canada?
I thought it was either Canada or Mexico.
Hold on. We got another call. We'll get another call. And maybe so far, we have not heard the winning combination. Rick Guillen over here is absolutely stunned by the pace of this quiz show here.
and I might know the answer, but I'm not allowed to play. So
Teresa, thanks for calling. Anyway, you have a good day. Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay, that's Teresa out there in Central Minnesota. And now we are going to go to, here's one of our old friends, Dana B. down there in Judd. There's certain names. You're a son of North Dakota, Rick. Don't you like certain names like Ray, Max, Judd, Zap? Those are great names for towns, aren't they?
Mott's a good one, too.
Mott. Well, that's four letters, though. Double T. Okay, Dana, can you help us out? Which country do you think holds the most American debt?
I believe it's the land of the rising sun, Japan.
It is indeed Japan. Mm. They hold $1.23 trillion worth of American debt. China's a strong second. United Kingdom is third at $615 billion. Then, I don't have the numbers, but it goes down. Luxembourg, here's one, the Cayman Islands. Paul, why do you think the Cayman Islands would be holding so much of our debt?
Well, because American businesses go to the Cayman Islands for some tax-free treatment.
Certainly do.
It's not the sandy beaches?
You know, Luxembourg, which is quite a worldwide financial center. And then the other ones after Cayman Islands, Switzerland, Ireland, Belgium, France, Taiwan. But Cayman Islands is fifth overall.
All right. Wow. Well, that was nice to get that down. And I'm glad Dana was able to answer the question. What's next?
What's next? Well, Dana.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Dana. Sorry.
You were talking about the growth in the stock market there.
Yes.
How does that compare in the growth of the national debt?
Well, they certainly overall have both been on an upward trend.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, from 2004 to 2023, it went up how much?
What do we say, 125?
125% in 10 years is the growth of the stock market, including, you know, 2022, as rugged as this year's been.
What was the point? How many from what to what? 22,000.
Well, from 2012, October 4th, until October 4th of this year, mm-hmm. the market is up 125% in 10 years.
No, and that, like, what did it go to on the board? Was it 22,685, and then what was it in 2012?
Well, it was at 13,494 mm-hmm. in 2012, mm-hmm. and now, of course, it slipped back a little bit, just under 30,000. It's been as high as, what, 33,000 or something?
Correct.
But it's right around.
So what was the national debt then in 2012, and what was the national debt in 2023, did you say?
Well, no, we haven't reached 2023.
Or 2022, excuse me.
It's 31 trillion. It passed 31 trillion.
Yeah.
Right.
But so we probably have to.
From 2012. To 2022, how much did the national debt increase?
Well, we'd probably have to research it.
I'm trying to find the correlation of, it seems to me like every 1,000 points is about $1 trillion.
Well, and, they would have a positive correlation, but whether the one is driving the other,
Steve, I can see Alice in Wonderland and the rabbits down this hole. The point is, you're right, the national debt has gone up considerably. There's not necessarily a correlation between the two, although you could probably find one if you beat on it long enough. The fact is that the national debt has climbed pretty much under every president we've ever had. So, you know, that's what happens. I know when President Obama was in office, he had reduced the ongoing national debt considerably, but since then, I think it's gone up considerably.
And when Bill Clinton was in, didn't they have a surplus, $80 billion surplus?
Yeah, that's probably correct. He worked closely with the GOP House of Representatives to balance the budget, but the debt still grew by $1.4 trillion by the time Clinton left the office in 2001. Dana, we're going to have to zoom along unless you've got a final point to make on this. All righty.
No, okay. I was going to say, I hope everybody has a beautiful Sunday and get yourself to church.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. The church on time. Dana B. from Judd. Thanks so much, Dana. Well, we're about just under 2 minutes until we do our top of the hour news. I don't know that we can really get to our 5 points in 5 minutes.
So you know what? There is one that I'd like to get to, Steve.
Okay, let's skip the intro. Let's go right. Five points in 5 minutes.
Yeah, let's just get to this one. So this one is interesting. I put this together. This is part of the reason I wanted to get to it, but it's an important factoid, and it kind of hits home here in the Fargo-Moorhead here. New York Yankee baseball slugger Aaron Judge has now hit more home runs in a season than any other player in American League's 122-year history. Before the end of the season, Judge surpassed Babe Ruth and then Roger Maris by hitting his 62nd home run on the second to last day of the season. Roger Maris previously held the home run record of 61 home runs in the season of 1961. Ironically, the Maris home run record stood for exactly 61 years. Isn't that interesting, Steve?
Well, yeah, that 61 is the magic number.
It was.
Yeah, that was.
It was a pretty big deal, and I just wanted to say that, you know, I was following the home run race throughout the season, and I'm really impressed with Aaron Judge and, you know, what a class act he is.
Well, right.
And how he represented himself.
And he just narrowly edged out of the Triple Crown. He led the league not only home runs but RBIs and was right up there second only to the Twins, Luis Arraez, who won the batting title. He does not hit with nearly the power.
Not nearly the power.
Does, but then who does? Okay, well, we're going to talk a lot about the restaurant industry and what's going on with Rick Guion in the second half of our show as we near the top of the hour. You've been listening to Investment Talk brought to you by the advisors at Legacy Wealth Management, over 550 KFYR in Bismarck, at 104.7 KFGO and 790, the mighty 790 KFGO here in Fargo. We'll be back right after the news.
You know, it comes around here.
All right. Welcome back to the second half of Investment Talk, brought to you by the advisors at Legacy Wealth Management, who can be reached at 701-365-8083. They specialize in all things having to do with investments, and with particular focus, I think it'd be fair to say, Brian, at retirement, right?
That's right, investments and retirement. Yeah. And, you know, Paul, we should also mention that we have a couple of seminars coming up. First one's in Bismarck on Tuesday, October 18th. At the Radisson in Bismarck, starting at 6 to 7:30 p.m. And our listeners out in the central and western part of North Dakota or northern part of South Dakota are interested in that, they can give us a call at 701-365-8083. They can also email us, team@legacywealthfargo.com. And then we also have one in Fargo coming up on Tuesday, October 25th at the Holiday Inn from 6 to 7 p.m. So the folks in eastern half of North Dakota, western Minnesota, and that area can also give us a call or email us at our team page. And we're pretty excited about that, aren't we, Paul?
Well, we are, because, you know, when I was mentioning that Minnesota Twins factoid, I didn't want to make it sound like we're not concerned about the markets, because we don't like to see the markets go down. But we do have some ideas about what we may expect going forward and what things people can do. And we're going to talk about those at the seminar. We don't have all the answers by any means, but we do know the questions, and we're going to have a chance to talk about those. And you know what's great is we sometimes say, oh, this is a chance for you to get to see us in person. But you know what? It's really a chance for us to get to see all those people out there in person. So if you've got a question or a concern about the market, or you're interested in what's going on, we hope you give us a call and do register for that. It's going to be fun at the Radisson in Bismarck and the Holiday Inn in Fargo.
All right. Well, with that as promised, we have got a guest in-house here that's going to discuss what's going on in the food and beverage industry these days, and there's a lot of it. And he's a young man who actually, you have a page on Facebook, right?
I do. It's called Fargo Moorhead Eats, Fargo-Moorhead Eats. We have about 8,500 followers. It'll probably get to about 10,000 by the end of the year, and it's just a community page where people can post what they're eating and cooking around the area.
And I should say, that's Rick Guillen, who I can tell you from personal experience. He knows what he's talking about because, I mean, we pretty much all like eating. Rick especially enjoys eating.
Yes, we go back a ways with having big lunches, don't we, Steve?
Rick and I, you know, you go back, oh, and I know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
We'd sometimes be out as a photographer reporter team in the news, and lunchtime would roll around. Well, let me tell you, Rick likes a robust lunch.
I do. I still do.
And it would leave me very sleepy in the afternoon keeping up with you. Well, anyway, it's an important part of the economy anywhere, and especially here in Fargo-Moorhead, and across the region. Food and what is the status of things, Rick, for the good and the bad?
Yeah, I would say it's a mixed bag. You see a lot of good things, and you see a lot of negative things, unfortunately. It's from what I'm hearing, it's three specific issues. Number one being workforce staffing. That's the largest challenge. Number two is food costs. And number three is the supply chain issues with transportation. And that's why you're seeing a lot of your menu items go up, things like that. And also on the food page, you see some complaints about extra fees, like a kitchen fee or one of those things. So restaurants are getting fairly creative about how to make up for lost income. And it's interesting to watch. But on my list, actually, the restaurant openings are more than the restaurant closing. So
you want to enumerate some of those for us and just where they are?
You bet. Locally here, Nova Eatery, which is owned by Nikki Ness Berglund from Luna Bernie's Soul Avenue Kitchen. Ryan Nitschke's the head chef there. That's in Fargo Brewing that recently opened. There's some very unique items on the menu there. El Vaquero is another Mexican place. A lot of Mexican places around. That's very good close by here on 13th Avenue. Boss's Pizza and Chicken in downtown, that was a big one. Statewide, the big one is in Grand Forks right now, that's being watched because Food Network star Molly Yeh, who just put out another cookbook, her second cookbook, opened a place called Bernie's in Grand Forks. And it is kind of a deli bakery sort of format. But she's half Jewish and half Chinese and comes from Illinois. She married a farmer in Grand Forks, rural Grand Forks. They met at Juilliard School of Music. And now she was a food blogger, put out a book, and now is a Food Network star in Grand Forks. So it's very neat, and I may go up there today, actually.
Be a lot of influences on the cuisine that they'd have at that establishment, I would think.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Okay.
So it's very close to Birnbaum's downtown with that kind of Jewish deli sort of thing.
Boy, yeah. They certainly seem to be busy all the time.
I was in there yesterday. I went in there about, I want to say, 9:30, 10 o'clock. The line was just about out the door. It stayed just about out the door till noon when I left because I was doing a little work on the computer. But yes, Andrea, Brett over there are very busy.
Okay.
Well, Rick, you mentioned a number of the new ones that are opening, and that's just fantastic to read about that. Of course, on our TV show today, we talk with Aaron Barth, who has the Huckleberry House in Bismarck overlooking the river. He's helped working on that as well as the riverboat that goes up and down the Missouri. But there have been a lot of ones that have closed lately, and I know you keep on top of those too.
Yes, locally here, CJ's Kitchen announced they will be closing in another week or so here. I'd get down there and have some of their really good, delicious breakfast. They're known as kind of a breakfast stop in the area, a favorite. Johnny Carino's a huge name that closed both here in Fargo and Bismarck. Everest Tikka House is a favorite of people that like ethnic cuisine. They were located over in Moorhead. They closed recently in the Moorhead Center Mall, so that was really too bad. Specifically in Bismarck, the Big Boy, a favorite statewide, has had a little trouble because of staffing shortages. They actually had to close for a whole day. There was an article in the Bismarck Tribune recently this week about some of the troubles Bismarck restaurants are having. Noodle Zip is a big one there. This summer, Woodhouse closed, which is kind of a North Dakota icon where you can order hamburgers to the kitchen on a phone. You pull the phone off the wall, old school, and order your meal. So that was really tough to see the Woodhouse close.
So if I'm reading this right, the biggest reason for closing is they just can't get sufficient staff?
Staffing's number one. Yep. And all the restaurant owners I talk to, it's staffing is number one. And that from Birnbaum's or Beer and Fish to, I was at Thunder Coffee yesterday, Shields Barbecue Championship. And then, yeah, I kind of had a food tour. I was at Birnbaum's too. And it was kind of a food day yesterday. But you find out all sorts of interesting factoids when you're just out and about talking with people. And little information about Hodo we can talk about too, because
yes,
I know people want to be updated on that.
Which is one of there's a lot of prime real estate in downtown Fargo
yes.
these days as well.
Yeah,
as
that's great.
But nothing could be more the epicenter than that corner on Broadway and NP Avenue, or is that First Avenue North? But anyway, where the Hotel Donaldson, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I found out when it closed, when Karen owned it, I was in like one of the top five patrons there of all time. And I'm not going to tell you how much money I spent, but I got a lot of those green rewards cards and those of you that know the Hodo. But yes, so their target was to have the bar open on Halloween. Just because it's Halloween downtown, and I'm sure that would be a real fruitful night for them, and it's always fun. But I've been hearing was then pushed back to mid-November, and now it's being pushed back to late November, which I get. I mean, construction, you're dealing with staffing issues, supply issues, cost issues there. And so, maybe early December or something, we'll see. But I will be going to Hodo to check it out. They're redoing parts of the bar, restaurant, the kitchen. And I think about half the rooms are being redone. So major, major investment by Jim Poolman and that Blarney Stone.
Half of the actual hotel rooms are being redone?
Yes.
Oh, my. Well, that obviously would be a big infusion of new investment. Do you any idea? One of the things that many of us really especially liked about the Hodo was the live music on Thursday nights in there. It was a very from all genres of music, and that almost always attracted a nice big crowd. Sometimes it would be with a local band, other times traveling through. But you know if they have any idea of bringing that tradition back?
I know, just kind of chatting with Jim Pullman on text, they're going to try to keep some of that vibe, some of the art, some of the music, some of that community. And that's what I think is really, that's going to be a real positive. Because, yeah, live music on Thursday nights was wonderful. I spent most of my money on Thursday nights. I live like three blocks away from the Hodo. So Thursday was a big day for me. Friday morning was not.
To listen to Rick, you'd think the guy has swollen up to about 400 pounds, but you're really a pretty trim. You're at your fighting weight, aren't you, Rick?
Well, if you call 230 a fighting weight, I mean, I wish it was muscle.
I knew him when he was closer to a welterweight.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You know,
here comes the eater.
Put your hands together. You know, the reason we're talking about all of this, really, of course, it's really a pretty interesting topic, because whether you're in Bismarck or Washburn or Minot or Grand Forks or Mayville or Fargo, an awful lot of people go out for food and beverage, whether it's just for a drink after work or to have a glass of wine with a nice meal or whatever. Isn't it fascinating, Rick, how some restaurants are absolutely jammed and others are struggling a little bit? And along those lines, for example, in both Bismarck and Fargo, you go to the Texas Roadhouse, and it's a waiting line to get in.
Yep.
And it is that way pretty much nationally. And yet you go to some places, and you feel like, oh, boy, there's hardly anybody here. And I don't know what the conclusion you can draw from that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's product or service or both. Or, you know, here they like to sell advertising, so marketing, you know, all play a big role in that. Social media these days, all play a big role in it. I mean, for me, I will wait or deal with service that isn't so great. If the food is awesome, I will definitely go there and put up with bad service. So location. I mean, it's always about location. You know, chain franchise restaurants, a lot of them seem to do well in the upper Midwest, but also a lot of local restaurants do too. I mean, Burn Bombs is killing it right now. So it's just a mix. And I think that's kind of the usual, but, I mean, I'd encourage people to go out to eat, grab a bite to eat, help these restaurants out, be sure to tip your servers, be patient. You know, this is a challenging time for the service industry, bar and restaurants. Be patient with folks. Try not to get too frustrated with some of the service they're dealing with. Some of these restaurants are down to a third of the staff they usually have. And so just ask for some patience there.
Yeah,
that's a good attitude.
I think that's a good attitude. You know, when you talked about some of the challenges around staffing or, you know, the inflationary pricing challenges and things like that, they almost don't seem necessarily tied to a local issue, but these are national trends as well. Do you see any chance in the near term or horizon that these things are going to improve or anything like that?
Well, I think just like with the stock market or the housing market, it's year to year, you know, it's, and right now it's a mixed bag, and sometimes things improve and sometimes they take a dive. And we hope that the bar and restaurant industry doesn't take a dive. And that's why I encourage folks to get out. And
you would certainly have to think that management at these places has got to be thinking about treating staff well to keep them around. Because if they say they, you know, want to keep working, but hey, not here. There's right down the street, maybe next door, there's openings. So it's sort of workers' market these days in that industry.
We talked about that on the TV show. Yes, wages in some places for just regular workers are almost up to $20 an hour. Now, if you're a server, you're probably going to get paid, you know, minimum server's wage or bartender's wage, which honestly, in my opinion, should go up a little bit. But then when you're talking about higher wages, a lot of restaurants are now offering like health insurance, retirement plans, certain things like that, that I think that's great, but at the same time, like Brady pointed out on the TV show, then those costs will be passed down to those patrons at the restaurant. So it needs to be a balancing act, though, and I think it'll start balancing out fairly soon.
Have you dined at Jasper's?
I have, yeah.
I'm assuming it kind of looks like the place is doing pretty good trade.
Yeah, and they make very, very good cocktails. They're more on the high-end pricing-wise, but you do get very good service, and the cocktails are very good, yes.
And I forget the name of it now. Was it called 84? Over in the Radisson?
And Jasper, the restaurant there, is called Rosewild, but yes, yeah. 84 Steakhouse. That's run by Monty Jones. Yeah.
A name that's familiar to many.
Everyone loves Monty. He's a great guy. And they've hired a new chef, I think, as of about a month ago. And people on the food page are going nuts over it. Lobster, Thermidor, steaks, certain things like that. People are giving it rave reviews. And that's a place I need to check out for myself.
Yes. If Rick hasn't been there.
You know, Rick hasn't been there. That's amazing. But, to switch this back a little bit to the investing world, Brian, you were talking about it in the first half of the today's radio show, and it's something that we're going to be talking about at our seminars coming up. But the September job gains that were announced on Friday, they really do confirm the fact that the Fed probably has a long way to go in this inflation fight. And I'm wondering, maybe you want to talk about what we've noticed and you know, the hill that we're going to have to get over.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a challenge because, you know, like you said, we have a strong, robust jobs market. The number that came out on Friday, 263,000 added jobs to non-farm payrolls, was below the estimate of 275,000. But as you said, you know, that's not enough to convince the Fed to scale back its interest rate hikes.
And we saw the actual national unemployment rate dip again from 3.7 down to 3.5%.
And that's a good point that you bring up, Steve. I just wanted to finish that. So the Fed's mandate has really two things, and that's to control inflation to get it around 2%. And the full employment rate is actually around 5%. So being that we're at, what you say, 3.5%. Yeah, they have some room for the employment picture to actually get worse before they start easing their policy. Yeah. So that's really what's going on right now. The whole notion of good news is bad news, as you were saying.
I've been around a long time, and I don't know, Brian or Rick or Paul, do you ever remember a national unemployment rate being lower than 3.5%? My goodness, it was approaching 10% there back in tough days.
Of the Great Recession. I certainly don't. This is one of the best job markets, in my lifetime that I've ever seen. And that's, like you said, that isn't always a bad thing, but it just, it's making the Fed policy and their mandates a really tough thing to get a strangle on.
Well,
Steve, I have kind of an attitude about this, and I'm going to tell you what it is, you know. If you remember back to the Middle Ages, of course, Steve, you and I are the only ones who were around at that time.
Yeah,
but seriously,
the days of the portcullis.
Yeah, a long time ago, hundreds and hundreds of years ago in the Middle Ages, one of the ways that they controlled illness or disease was a practice called bloodletting. They would either attach leeches to you or they'd literally split open a vein and let some blood drain out. And they said, this is probably going to cure you because, as we know, the disease is in your blood. So let's let a little blood out of there. And, I use that as an analogy. I don't really like it when the Federal Reserve says, the main way we're going to control inflation is by raising the interest rate.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that – I think higher interest rates actually translate into an expense for so many businesses, certainly does for farmers and for everybody else. And I think they would be better off if they found a way to address the fact that there's kind of a dichotomy in earnings in this country. You've got businesses like restaurants that are struggling, and they're not exactly raking in huge profits when they struggle. And then you've got places like the pharmaceutical industry and healthcare and some of those other areas, insurance, that are making huge money by raising their prices. And I think if they found a way to moderate it, well, the next time we get down to doing the market week in review, we'd see some better numbers.
Yeah, we got to get to that. So thanks, Rick, so much for coming in. The discussion has been very fascinating on the food and beverage industry across the region.
You bet. All anytime.
Right. Let's go to our final feature.
Legacy Wealth Management presents The Stock Market Week in Review with Steve Poitras.
Yes, in spite of a big dip on Friday, the major indexes actually closed up for the week. The Dow stands at 29,296, which was a 2% gain for the week. S&P 500 closed at 3,639. It was up 1.5% for the week. The NASDAQ closed at 10,652. That was up 0.7% for the week. Oil had a big up week, up 17%, up by more than $13 to $93.20 a barrel. Gold was up $33 an ounce to just over $1,700, $1,701. Facebook was down $2. Year-to-date, Facebook is off 60%. Apple was actually up a couple of dollars, but year-to-date, Apple's down 23%. Google was up $3. Microsoft was up $2. Year-to-date, Microsoft is off 30%. Amazon was virtually unchanged, up $1 to $1.14. They're off 32% for the year. Netflix, down $11 to $2.24. Year-to-date, Netflix is down 62%. Tesla, even though they've got big numbers in terms of turning out more cars, they were down $42 for the week to $223. Year-to-date, Elon Musk's Tesla is off 44%. Bitcoin, latest I saw this morning, was at $19,520. Bitcoin's off about 59% year-to-date. Otter Tail was up 23 cents to $61.75. Best Buy was up 89 cents to $64.53. The national average price of gas stands this morning at $3.91, up 21 cents over the last 2 weeks. In Fargo, since about a week ago, it's up about 10 cents a gallon. Mostly, you'll see it at $3.69. It's $3.75 across North Dakota, up 6 cents a gallon for the week. Minnesota at $3.79, up 12 cents a gallon. California, it's high again. They're averaging $6.39 a gallon for gas in California. And there's a lot of high prices out in the Northwest, too. Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Arizona, their prices have gone up. Cheapest gas in Mississippi and Georgia, it's averaging about $3.20 a gallon. Soybeans was up 6 cents a bushel to $13.66. Wheat down 23 cents to $9.46. So that's a quick look at the markets. And again, even though it took a big hit on Friday, October started out with an up week, and we keep it going.
Yeah, just wanted to make one comment real quickly here, Steve, on the oil. You said it was up $13.46 per barrel. OPEC came out with its announcements that it was cutting production output by 2 million barrels per day, and that was a big reason why.
Indeed, that's a big factor in why. So,
Steve, one of the things that Brian and Brady and I talk about is what can we do for our clients and for people who call in. And one of the things we try to do is make heads or tails, make some sense out of all the things that are going on and give some people some comfort and some guidance for the future. We're going to be doing that at those seminars coming up. Just a final note that people want to register for that. They ought to do that as soon as they can. We'd love to get a chance to meet them. And we'll do our best to try to figure out where this market is headed and what people can do to take advantage of the opportunity.
Okay. Thanks very much, Paul. Thanks, Rick Guillen, again, for coming in this morning. And for producer Josh Linus, for Brian Bruce, for Paul Myers, I'm Steve Poitras. For Legacy Wealth Management, thanks for joining us here this morning over KFYR in Bismarck and 790 KFGO in Fargo. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.
You've been listening to Investment Talk, a one-hour show heard each Sunday morning here on KFGO and featuring investment advisor Paul Myers from Legacy Wealth Management. If you have questions or concerns about your investments, you can reach Paul or his financial advisory team at the Legacy office in Fargo at 365-8083 or visit the website at legacywealthfargo.com. Securities and investment advisory services offered through LPL Financial as registered investment advisor, member FINRA and SIPC. Thanks for listening. Give us a call, and we'll look forward to being back here next Sunday on KFGO.